is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It is the late 8th century in Europe, and a new phenomenon sweeps over what is now the United Kingdom and Ireland, which is something that we think of as Vikings. More properly, they're Norsemen. They came to murder. They came to steal. They came to wipe out whatever was there. In England's case, it was the Anglo-Saxons left over from the exit of the Romans. And they came to stay eventually. And then they became restless. A new book, American Vikings, How the Norse Sailed into the Lands and Imaginations of America. Martin Wittek is the author. I congratulate him. And we begin immediately with the economics of Vikings and the meaning of the word Vikings and what is propelled men and women in, to quote the Iliad, their dark boats, their shallow boats, what propelled them to sail west and west and west into what becomes the New World. Martin, congratulations and good evening. I ask the first question that everybody needs to understand. What does Viking mean? Where does it come from? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show. Well, Viking is more something that you did than what you were, although today it's become the label of choice to describe Scandinavians in the so-called Viking Age. And I do explain this in the book, that the snappy title American Vikings should actually probably be better to be phrased as North American Norse, but it doesn't quite have the same impact. And today it's become a label of choice by which we use to describe the entire phenomenon, the entire society of Scandinavia between the 8th century and about 1100. But Viking itself was something more that you did. There are various debates as to where the word actually comes from itself. Some think it's related to an area of Norway. Some have linked it to areas of later Iceland, showing this same kind of use of the word vik, meaning a creek or an inlet. So it might mean people that basically inhabited creeks or inlets, fjords, or sailed out from there. There is some possibility it may be connected to an old Norse word, meaning to turn about, to travel, to restlessly go on your way. But basically, it describes usually young men, not always young either, but certainly a lot of young men who were engaged in muscular free enterprise, who burst out of Scandinavia in the late 8th century, seeking the riches of Western Europe, and raided monasteries, coastal settlements, and also with their shallow drafted boats could sail very far up rivers too, to attack inland areas as well, striking into the Low Countries, what we now call France, the kingdoms of the British Isles, the area of the Northern Isles, of Pictland, of Ireland, sailing round into the Mediterranean, raiding in North Africa, and going eastward into the Baltic as well, and sailing down the river systems of Russia to reach the Caspian Sea, the Black Sea, and even Byzantium, Constantinople, modern Istanbul. It's a quite extraordinary diaspora of people that burst out of Scandinavia seeking to appropriate the wealth of communities further south and then use it as part of Scandinavian society.
There are four reasons for the movement of these young men to go a Viking. First is the population growth, and second is Christianity. These were savages, pagan. They worshipped cruel gods, and they had a cruel life. The population growth said, our land is too poor to sustain us, so we're looking. They also traded, and they understood that trade was a benefit. But the one that most attracted me, Martin, because it never occurred to me that the world is connected in the 8th century AD, is silver, their need for silver. What happened that they had to go looking in Britain for silver because it no longer came up from the Black Sea? What happened?
Yes, it's quite extraordinary. As you say, population growth in Scandinavia seems to have lain behind it. Kingdom building as well in Scandinavia, as stronger rulers were able to strike abroad from a stronger base. And those who lost out went abroad, seeking to basically try their luck elsewhere. A push back against the Frankish Empire, the Christian Frankish Empire that's extending north into what we now call southern Denmark. But perhaps the most extraordinary extraordinary aspect of all, the most extraordinary causal factor of all, is the disruption that took place in the Islamic Caliphate that saw center of power shifting from Damascus to Baghdad during the 8th century. And this disruption disrupted the trade in Islamic silver north along the trade routes of what we now call Russia and Ukraine into Scandinavia. And what this meant was this silver, which was exchanged for furs and amber and slaves, which went one way, and silver that went the other way, fueled the kind of gift-giving economy of Scandinavia. Islamic coins would be melted down, for example, and would reappear as arm rings, bracelets, the kind of things that kings and warriors gave to their followers to reward them. But when these things were disrupted, they needed to look elsewhere for a ready source of slaves, but also, as importantly, more importantly, a ready source of raw materials such as gold and silver, which they could then take back and melt down and use as part of Scandinavian gift giving. And of course, coastal settlements had coinage. Coastal monasteries had a lot of precious metal products in terms of plate and chalices. And these were obviously very attractive for people who are now living in a silver poor environment, but need a silver rich environment in order for their society to function.
Martin's book solved a mystery to me. Why the Vikings, the Norsemen, came to Britain and they concentrated on the monasteries. And they plundered silver. That's what they cared about. I thought, where does this come from? What do they care about it? Now I understand. Baghdad. There was a silver mine in what is now Tajikistan. It's all connected. So now we need to come to the Vikings. The Norsemen are restless. And they continue to push in the 9th and 10th century westward, always westward. My dates here, and help me, is they reached the Iceland between 860 and 930 in that region, in much the same way they'd reached Britain, but there were no monasteries there, so they settled. They became a farmer class. Is that correct, Martin?
Yes, that's largely true. As you say, basically, during the 9th century, this is the big century of expansion, starts at the late 8th century. But during the 9th century, we see escalating Scandinavian Viking raids on communities both sides of what we in the UK call the English Channel, in the Low Countries, in the coast of France, along the coast of the English Channel in southern England, striking into the Northern Isles, down into the Irish Sea, striking into Ireland and into Wales. And what we see then is this westward movement expand on from there. So having moved into Western Europe, having moved into the British Isles, they then begin to experience pushback there. They obliterate most of the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms except for one, but then there's a fight back, a pushback by Wessex. There's also a pushback by the Frankish kings against these attacks on the what is now the coast of France. And so in a sense, they have to look elsewhere. They have to look elsewhere. The impetus is to move westward. And of course, if you're sailing from Norway, for example, to sail from there to the Orkneys, Shetland, to then go on to Iceland, to go on to Greenland, is of course a logical move as people are beginning to explore lands well to the west. So we know that by the 870s, there are Scandinavian settlers from Norway primarily, but also from Ireland, who have moved on to found early Norse settlements in Iceland. So Reykjavik, for example, we've got evidence sealed by volcanic ash that probably was spewed out of a volcano in the 870s, overlying one of the earliest settlements found in Reykjavik. And it can still be visited. I visited it in the basement of a modern building there. So we know that this foundation of what became the Icelandic Commonwealth is starting from the 870s. Rumours then begin to appear of land even further to the west in the 930s, which is confirmed in the middle and the second half of the 10th century, which proves to be Greenland. Now, some of this is deliberate, purposeful exploring of land to the west. Some of this is the product of mistakes, of storm-driven sailors who end up on foreign shores and then realise they've landed on a place that no one has landed on before. But the movement westward takes people from Scandinavia to the British Isles, to Iceland, to Greenland, and eventually it's based on the Greenland settlement that we have the push onwards Again, probably based upon problems caused by storms that threw sailors off course, that eventually will take them to, as we'll discuss in due course, this land far to the west, which they call Finland.
The book is American Vikings, How the Norse Sailed into the Lands and Imaginations of America. When we come back, it is the year 983 A.D., and a man is named Erik the Red in Greenland. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.